Hello, everyone. I'm Robbie Darman, and this is The Serial Fanaticist, the podcast for fans of everything. Welcome. Today, I'm joined by Helen Hunter to talk about art and wrestling. Helen is an artist who I discovered through her oil paintings of Joshi wrestling, or Japanese women's wrestling. We talk about the confluence of pro wrestling and high art, wrestling without a crowd, and the similarities between death matches and porn. It's always fun to talk to someone new about wrestling, and it was a great chat. On to the discussion. Hello, everyone. I am here with Helen Hunter. Helen, how are you doing?
I'm great. Thanks for having me. How are you?
I'm all right. I'm doing okay. For a Monday, I'm doing okay.
Yeah, week 10, or at least it's been 10 weeks for us over here.
Week 10 of infinite quarantine.
Yes, of the new normal, which is a phrase I have come to hate. But look, I just said it.
I mean, from what I can see on Reddit and Twitter and all the other places, like, it's back to normal. Well, we just go out to bars and restaurants and party down. It's totally fine.
You know, I like don't even know what to say about that. It's so frustrating. I just want this to be over, and I'm so much more willing to like be uber cautious if it can end sooner. But my heart really breaks knowing that live pro wrestling is going to be like the last thing that comes back.
I mean, there's pro wrestling now in America without real crowds.
I know, but all right,
it's sort of pro wrestling. What's a good place to start? What are your thoughts on pro wrestling without a crowd?
It's just a different kind of like, I don't know. I have thoughts about pro wrestling is like a live art form. Mm-hmm. And when it gets made for recording, it like kind of becomes a different thing. I don't know. I mean, I enjoy watching recorded pro wrestling 100%, but going to live shows and like having that visceral reaction of being in a space where people are like doing crazy shit with their bodies, like, I don't know. It's different. You can't, it's not the same as watching it on TV.
I mean, that's true. I can't argue with that. Live pro wrestling is one of the best things you can do with your life. It's just to be in the same room as, you know, idiots throwing themselves at each other.
It's unbelievable. Like, I have just big time imposter syndrome where I'm just like constantly feeling like I don't belong places. And the first time in my like adult life that I remember not feeling that way was at a pro wrestling show where I was like, oh, hell yeah, this is the weirdest thing I can be doing with my time. And it feels so right.
Yeah. Pro wrestling in quarantine. Well, we can circle back around to that, I guess. Helen, you're an artist. I don't know how I stumbled upon. I saw someone reposted, I think, one of your pieces. I forget who, I forget where. Maybe it was Twitter, maybe it was Instagram, maybe it was Tumblr even. I don't remember. And I found you and I was like, this, and I saw the piece that's hanging up on my wall, the Bull Nakano.
Nice.
And I'm looking at it right now and it's lovely. And I just saw that and I was like, you don't see, and it's the thing that I think struck out to me. And I think I went on your website and I read your I don't know if it's like a mission statement or an ethos or just a statement about your art.
Like artist statement, yeah.
Yeah, about wrestling as high art and using oil paintings to paint professional wrestling and Joshi wrestling in particular. How did that? It's a question. Like, I think one of the first questions, like, trying to think what would I ask you? It's like, how did you get to that? How did you arrive at, I am going to make oil paintings of Joshi wrestlers?
I had a feeling you would ask that question, and it's kind of been like a weird ride that I'm still figuring out. So I got into pro wrestling in 2018. And have you ever heard of Monster Factory?
Oh, yeah. I love Monster Factory.
Okay. I am a huge McElroy fan. Just like everything they do is fantastic. But
tip to toe. That's a Bart.
Yeah, exactly. So their episode with the pebble, mm-hmm. the one where they go into 2K and make the rock, but the pebble, they had him do, I think it was like Naomi's entrance on WWE, and they had him do like Shinsuke's entrance too. And in that moment, I was like, hold on, I don't think I know what wrestling is. And just from there, I went down a YouTube hole and I saw Shinsuke's intro, and I was just like, his WWE intro. And I was just like really confused. And that kind of led to like, well, maybe I should watch SmackDown. And, you know, finally, like, this was just a curiosity for a couple weeks until my grandma passed away. And the day after her funeral was WrestleMania. And I was just like, I don't want to feel anything anymore. I just want to watch like something that's going to make me laugh. And it was that WrestleMania in 2018 where Ronda Rousey picked up Triple H. And I don't know if you remember that, but there's just like this great shot of her with like this terrible look on her face. And Triple H is like twice her size easily. And I found myself just like crying. And I know that, you know, I was sad about my grandma having passed away, but I was also like, I've never seen a woman like dominate a man like this before. And then like 20,000 people or however many people were there were just like cheering her on. And it made me realize that there was like this hole in me, or like something that I really needed to satisfy, that was getting satisfied by watching like an angry ass woman beat the shit out of somebody. I know, right? So it was this really weird, like, I remember getting more and more into wrestling. Like, from there, I started watching the main roster pretty regularly and was like really into Asuka and just like, just really interested in like what was it about this like fearsome woman persona that so many wrestlers have that was really intriguing to me. So from there, I kind of like, one of my friends was like, hey, if you like wrestling, you should watch New Japan. And that's how I got into Japanese wrestling. And then from there, I don't really know how I stumbled onto Joshi, but it just kind of got on my radar. And as soon as I watched, I think one of the first matches I watched was like Akira Hokuto versus Bull Nakano in a cage match.
Oh, is that the one where she does a leg drop off the top?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh God. I just watched that the other day, and every time I watch it, I like, it takes
your breath away.
It's impressive, but it's also terrifying. It's like doing a like, I know how terrible leg drops are in general, and then doing it from like 25 feet in the air is, and then she just jumps right up, hops right up. Nothing.
Like I often think about that internet video that went around where the guy's like, thank you for everything you do to your bodies. You know, do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes. Wrestling's still real to me, damn it.
Yeah. I think about that constantly. And as I was watching Joshi, like the first matches I had ever watched, I was just like, holy fuck, these women like don't care about traditional notions of like propriety. They're like laughing at this, like, you know, gender expectations by just how wantonly they're going out and embracing violence. And that was so novel to me that that's when I decided I wanted to spend more time with that. And honestly, my first series of Joshi paintings I made in the fall of 2018 was, it was a class assignment, and I just like wanted to get a better handling of oil paint. And so I was like, I'm just going to choose subject matter that I want to look at. I basically made it so that I could watch Joshi and argue that it was homework.
I mean, fair. That's a fair point.
Yeah. And through that, I started to think about impressionist artists like Degas, for instance, who was enamored with like ballet and wanted to talk about movement and light through using, you know, ballet figures as his subjects. So that's kind of how I think about making my impressionist Joshi paintings.
I mean, I love them all. They're all great.
Thank you.
And I mean, I think that's part of it to me, is part of the appeal. It's not just, oh, well, they are a beautiful painting. This was something that, like, covering something that, one, I find fascinating, and two, like, is a novel thing to see in an oil painting. But it's also that, you know, that discussion about wrestling as high art, wrestling as low art, and that schism, and that in the vast majority of people, professional wrestling is trash. It is, yeah. It is for rednecks. It's soap opera. That's what most, you know, mm-hmm. whenever I usually describe soap opera, when I describe, I like pro wrestling. I love pro wrestling even. They're like, oh, it's just soap operas for dudes. And I'm like, well, one, that's kind of discounting soap operas in general, because, you know, not, there's value in soap operas in general, even though they kind of don't exist anymore, at least not as they.
I mean, they've morphed. I mean, you can't say that Game of Thrones wasn't a soap opera. Well,
I know, but I mean, like, that. I mean, the daytime soaps kind of soap opera. Yeah. I mean, most of popular fiction nowadays has a heritage of soap operas, honestly. Even reality shows. Reality shows are basically soap operas.
Shows are basically pro wrestling.
Yeah, that's, yes. I mean, that's literally what, I mean, that's why there's the, what, the Bellas have their own show, and I mean, Total Divas, and the Miz has his and Mrs.
Yeah, I have to say, I'm like pretty well out of the WWE world. Once I made the jump to New Japan, I was like, oh, there's so much more here that appeals to me. But I don't want to move past your point about low and high art, because I think that's really intriguing with pro wrestling. And like, as I was, okay, so I feel like I'm one of the rare people that get into pro wrestling as an adult. Like, I don't have the childhood nostalgia for it, and I don't actually know a ton about, like, the Attitude Era. Like, I can identify wrestlers, but I can't tell you anything about, like, the storylines, really.
I kind of envy you, honestly.
Well, it gave me a vantage point of, like, looking at this from the perspective of, like, you know, an adult. Mm-hmm. And immediately I saw the parallels between pro wrestling and, like, Commedia dell'arte, the, you know, Italian Renaissance, like, performance art that embraced, like, archetypical characters, and they would perform in, like, a raised, like, theater that was outside and accessible to the public. And I think it you start to have this discussion about, like, who art and entertainment is for. Like, my grew up, my mom worked for a nonprofit that put on a classical music performance series during the year. And so I grew up seeing a lot of operas and stuff like that. And when I first got into pro wrestling, my mom was like, are you serious? And I was like, dude, how is this, like, any more dramatic than, like, Carmen, or, you know, some, like, The Marriage of Figaro, or, like, crazy stuff where everyone dies at the end and it's just this display of, like, physical prowess? Like, how well can you sing and tell the story through your voice or through your dancing or whatever? It's just, like, choreographed narrative fighting is what pro wrestling is. At least that's how I explained it to her. And you know, I think it's really interesting when you start to break down how stories, like, who's resonating with what kinds of stories, and how is the work functioning for the audience. And part of why I think that wrestling without a crowd, like a lot of what we're seeing now during lockdown, I mean, when you take away that interplay between the wrestlers and the people writing the stories and then the people receiving the stories, it just, like, becomes, like, I don't know, different.
I mean, I think there is, you know, WWE has no crowd, has nothing right now. I also do not watch, I don't watch WWE. I can't help but absorb the information from the dirt sheets, so to speak, from Meltzer and Squared Circle on Reddit. Mm-hmm. But I largely am, I'm like a scorned partner. I can't deal with the punishment they've done to me over the years anymore. I love a lot, many of the people who work for WWE. I still love, and I still have respect, and think they're great, but I can't expose myself to that anymore. It just causes me punishment.
All those wrestlers deserve to get that money. No judgment on them. It's like,
They can make their own judgments about what's best for their career. I'm not going to try and tell them that, oh, they need to go get a championship in Ring of Honor or New Japan, but get paid, you know, a third of what they get paid now or whatever.
Exactly.
But the WWE is not doing any crowds. AEW has wrestlers as their audience, basically.
I like how they do that. It's better than nothing.
It is better than nothing, and I do. I am an AEW fan. I love AEW. I also love it, New Japan. They're different, which is what I like about both of them, is that they're different from each other. Even though it seems like a lot of people wanted AEW to be just like New Japan, I kind of like that it's not, because I like different kinds of wrestling. When you have wrestlers in the crowds, they're still performing. It's not, you know, they're not like, I'm sure sometimes, yeah, when, you know, when Nyla Rose hits Sheeta right in the head with a kendo stick and everyone's like, oh, like, I'm sure some of that is a natural reaction, but I know that at the end of the day, well, yeah, they're getting paid to be performers, and this is just an extension of that. They're just like, well, you're here, we don't have a crowd, so go sit on the audience and like yell at people when they get close to you. It's not authentic. It is not a crowd, like you said. It's not the audience reacting authentically to their performance.
Yeah.
I will take the AEW with some wrestlers in the crowd. It is better than nothing, but it is not the same. It is like, and I think you see this online a lot from people discussing, like, oh, well, and New Japan themselves have said they are probably going to be going to shows without a crowd as soon as they can, safely, because they need to try and make some money, which is what, you know, they make a lot of their money from, you know, live gates, so I don't think they are in, you know, without the crowd, it's not as useful to them to have a show without a crowd. But at a certain point, you know, it's May. Are we not going to have a G1 this year? Like,
sorry.
No, I agree with you. That is exactly the sound my heart makes when I think about that. Like, not having a G1 to look forward to is very punishing. I mean, the pandemic has already taken Hair Movers as Naito away from us.
I know. It really makes me very sad. And then I remember that there's like hundreds of thousands of people who've died from this.
It's okay to be sad about both things. You're allowed to be sad about deaths of people and missing out on great art.
That's true.
But I mean, I think I think that is a thing that sets pro wrestling apart from other performance art. Like you mentioned ballet and opera, like, there's no crowd yelling or chanting or screaming in response to that or performances of classical music. I played cello in high school, and my conductor, my teacher, he was actually pretty kind of, he kind of resisted the rigor of civility of, oh no, you cannot clap between movements and you have to follow these procedures. And he was all about getting people in the audience to clap along with music and to try and liven things up a little bit. But I mean, professional wrestling is professional wrestling. And I was actually just looking over my old wrestling blog that I stopped writing a couple years ago, but it was there. I just read something that I had forgotten that I'd written about how trying to categorize pro wrestling as anything but pro wrestling is impossible. Like, you try and it, there's nothing like it. There is nothing else that combines all the things it does. Like, it is athletic. There is athleticism in it, like ballet. There is performance. There's acting, but there's also choreography. There's also violence and stunt work, basically.
Have you ever read this essay by a fellow named Roland Barthes? It's called Art of Wrestling. Well,
let me go over to the tab on my browser that is open to Roland Barthes' essay on wrestling. Yes, I was actually going to bring that up, but yes, I have.
Okay, cool. Yeah, that was really, someone else like sent that to me right when I got into wrestling and started to talk about it in relation to art. And I think it just like backs up what you're saying about pro wrestling being more complex than sport or theater individually. I mean, I'm trying to think right now what would be comparable. And it's hard to summon something.
Cirque du Soleil.
Yeah.
I
was just thinking like some kind of like show choir thing where you're dancing and singing at the same time, but you don't take as much physical punishment with that.
I mean, no. I mean, Cirque du Soleil performers are obvious. They do get, you know, they can get hurt because they are, you know, doing acrobatics and stuff that they could potentially fall. But it is not a part of the performance that pain is nested inside of. Like, if you are a professional wrestler, pain is a part of your story. There's no way to avoid it.
Yeah.
Totally. I mean, and I don't know. It's kind of an elephant in the room of being a fan of professional wrestling is how damaging it is to the human body. But I don't know if we have.
Yeah, that's something that I don't think about, to be honest. I just remind myself like, okay, these are grown ass adults that are making their own decisions. But then when I think about like why I don't watch football and like traumatic brain injury, it's like, oh, I hope I'm not watching somebody like, I don't know. Like, okay, so my husband and I went back to 2016 with New Japan because we just like have to watch wrestling. And this was before we got into it. So we just started with like, I think just before Wrestle Kingdom, and now we're kind of in the spring of 2016 and watching like Hanma in particular. Oh my God. And Shibata, that's the example.
No. Yeah. Shibata.
And Mike was like, my husband, Mike was like, okay, I don't know exactly when it is, but we have to look out for like a Shibata Okada championship match.
It's such a good match.
Does he like, I know he has an aneurysm, right?
Yeah.
Does he like pass out in the ring?
No, he does not. I was watching at the time and no one knew what was happening. Like there was no, you know, kayfabe. New Japan is way stronger in Japan is way stronger in kayfabe than we are in the US, and news media will often, wrestling media in Japan will often report stuff as if it's kayfabe. You know, they won't try and they won't break kayfabe. And the match is incredible. And I don't know if knowing what happens, like it's the last match of Shibata's career, most likely will always be the last match. Like I'm sure he wants to wrestle again, but no doctor will clear him after the traumatic brain. It's a miracle he's alive. But yeah, he had a brain bleed. I don't know if it was technically an aneurysm, but like it's the match and how incredible the match is. It's hard to watch knowing that's what happens to him, but it's still an incredible match. And one of my favorite Okada matches, probably my favorite Shibata match.
Mm-hmm.
But
man, he's great. I'd never really watched Shibata wrestle before. Holy shit. he's a great wrestler.
He's fantastic. And he works so well in the New Japan ecosystem. I think that's the thing, because you put him in a lot of other places, it won't work as well. But because of how New Japan works and how they tell their stories and the other characters, the other wrestlers around him, especially at the time, like he is the wrestler, you know, he just wears the black trunks. He's the descendant of Inoki himself, basically. Is like he was the strong style descendant down the line, him and Shinsuke, basically. And Shinsuke departed from that tradition because he became, you know, what he was. Like he still had that, as you're watching those matches, you know, in the 2010s to mid 2020 teens, he is Shinsuke, you know, his entrance gets more outlandish and he starts acting like Michael Jackson and Prince and being the Shinsuke we know, basically. But
yeah,
Shibata never does. Shibata is just that same guy and he's just like, I'm badder than you, it doesn't matter, I'm fucking really handsome and I'm gonna slap you right in the head over and over and over again.
Just right in the head.
Right in the head. I'm gonna get you, and you might knock the crap out of me. Won't matter. I have more fighting spirit than you.
Gosh, I love the black trunks too. I mean, it looks so dorky, but it's like saying like, fuck you. I don't need to not look dorky. I'm going to kick your ass.
I mean, that confidence is a part, I think it's just as much of anything about wrestling, because wrestling is like, yeah, it's all about the physicality and how they look is so important. They're like everyone, and they're all models. And I think that's I think you talk about it when you're talking about Joshi on your website, you're talking about the presentation of the female form in the 90s, in 90s Joshi in particular, where they are all presented. I don't know. I don't want to put words in your mouth. They're presented like, despite no matter how they look, they're all allowed to have the same kind of aggression and physical presence, even if they are, you know, conventionally attractive or not. They're all presented in equal measure, regardless of that fact. And like, I think it's the thing that, when done correctly in pro wrestling, that's the beauty of it, is where they're like the black trunks. Yeah, they are dorky. They're like, but yet Shibata is a complete badass. You watch his matches and you're just like, man, this guy is fucking awesome. He is the best. And yet he also looks like he's wearing like fucking tidy whiteys, except, you know, they're tidy. They're
tidy
black. Tidy black. But it's that same, like, people are wrestling in their underwear. It's goofy as hell. And yet they can still contain that same kind of gravitas, regardless of that fact.
Yeah. And man, to be able to do that without having to rely on dialogue is one of the reasons I love New Japan, or prefer it rather to WWE. I think they're just so strong at being able to like communicate narrative in ways like, you know, having Shibata dress really simply.
I mean, yeah, the story is told in the ring in all ways. You know, and I think there is, I don't know, it was a breath of fresh air when I discovered New Japan and realized like, oh, it is really good and the wrestling is great, but it's not just wrestling. I think people, they look at just, oh, it's like sports. And so, but then it's fake sports. So why are you watching it? I'm like, it's not just that. Look at these guys. look when Okada came back out with his shorts for the first time.
Yes. Oh my God.
People
lost their mind for that.
When he's finally out of his long pants. Okada is out of his long pants phase. He's back to his shorts.
To go back to Roland Barthes in that essay, I mean, he makes a really good point that the visceral nature, the experience of violence or witnessing violence shakes us more than just watching like a really dramatic play or something like that in terms of like relating to the narrative. I mean, I don't have the experience of like what it's like to do a crazy flip off the turnbuckle, but hearing somebody smack against the mat is going to make me, I don't know, really concerned for them in a way that buys me into the story.
I mean, it's inherently engrossing. It's inherently, it suspends your disbelief. The nature of the violence. And I think that's the New Japan's also like, they work stiffer than the WWE. WWE is safer, even though, because they wrestle so much more often, that there's just as many injuries. But because the physicality of New Japan and stiffer styles, you know, snugger styles, maybe even perhaps not even necessarily stiffer. I don't want to necessarily say that they're actually hitting people harder. It just looks like they are. It inherently draws you into that story. It tells you, going back to that Shibata Okada match, knowing that Shibata, like, there's Shibata would you shoot headbutts like an idiot. Like, I can't, there's no defending that. I'm not going to defend. You should not actually headbutt anybody. That's not a good idea. Don't do that, Shibata. And you like, I was like, every time I watch an old Shibata match and he pulls one out, he doesn't do it all the time, but you know, there's matches when I don't know if you've watched that run with the never title went back and forth between Shibata, Goto, Ishii, there was a run of those matches, and all those men are insane, and they it's like the third or fourth most popular, like, worthy title in New Japan technically, but they're just like, nope, whatever, we're just gonna headbutt each other as hard as we can.
I think we just watched New Year's Dash from 2016, where Shibata headbutt Ishii, and you could just hear it, and Kevin Kelly was like, oh my god, I'm never gonna unhear that sound.
It's awful.
When I see that stuff, I'm like, you guys, stop, please.
Don't do that, come on. It's okay just to do the, just do the thing that everyone does when they do headbutts. You just put your hand on this guy's head and you just do it, and it looks, and I get it. I know what a headbutt is in real life. I just don't ever see it. There's a reason that it got banned in MMA. All MMA, you can't use headbutts because they kill people.
Yeah.
Jesus. I mean, it's that Shibata match is, it's a great match, in even if that spot wasn't in it. If, you know, there wasn't that sickening headbutt that ends up basically ending Shibata's career.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, it is incredibly dramatic. And, like, that moment, there is a, I don't know if you've ever watched any of the Showbuckle videos or what's the other, there's two guys that did, like, basically, analysis of the art of, like, of some certain wrestlers, and I think it was Showbuckle, there's one other, I can't remember the name right now, but of course they've been New Japan's, if it's the Asahi TV or someone, pulled their all their stuff off YouTube, so now you have to go to, like, Daily Motion and to find it, and it's a pain in the ass, but he does a whole video about Shibata and his awareness of that drama, of an awareness of the cameras, and Shibata, like, stumbles out of the ring and out away from the camera after he loses, and no one knew what was real or not for, like, a week, until a week later everyone's like, oh, he's in the hospital and they're worried about him, and you're like, fuck, really? And it's, I don't know, there, it is that, it's those moments where that whenever I watch a match and someone does something insane, or there is an a botch or a mistake or whatever, and someone falls weird awkwardly on their neck or their head or their arm, and they come up grabbing it or holding their knee, I mean, it's kind of the beauty of pro wrestling, is like, is this real?
Yeah. Oh, I remember the first time I watched a ladder match, I had to turn it off because I didn't quite understand how, like, adept these people are at working that kind of stuff. The whole time I was just like, oh my god, someone's gonna lose a finger. That was really rough. And now I'm like just a total glutton for death matches. Tables have turned. I know.
I can't. That is the one thing I just can't watch. I just can't watch death matches.
Man,
I mean,
it depends for me, but like Megumi Kudo, speaking of Joshi, has some really incredible death matches where, with like exploding barbed wire ropes and stuff, which totally changes like how you have to wrestle for it to be entertaining, because like you don't have the ropes anymore, but then you also have this promise of like four explosions during the match. But I think maybe the craziest death match I ever watched, it was Japanese and it was from the 80s, and God, I can't even tell you who was in it, but it was a piranha coffin match. So like a coffin match, but the coffin is a tank of piranhas and the lid is like a piece of plywood that has, barbed wire on the inside. Yeah, I know. I mean, this is the part that still confused me. I don't understand why I like this stuff.
I mean,
I'm not really a violent person in my life.
I mean, it adds to the drama when they're, and frankly, it's like that is kind of, it's kind of like, it is the furthest extension of the absurdity of pro wrestling, of both the, like, you know, a normal wrestling match, like one on one, normal rules, no DQ, there's disqualification, you know, plain Jane,
There are things that happen in a wrestling match that would never, ever, ever happen in a real fight.
Mm-hmm.
An Irish whip.
Yeah, right?
Those don't... If you're Irish whipping someone to the ropes in a real fight, they would just not run. You throw them, right? You'd let go of them, and they would just turn around and hit you in the face. But because you're so ingrained in kind of the rules, because of the ingrained suspension of what you expect from the form, you go, ah, it's Irish whip, whatever. Yeah, of course. You throw him in the ropes and he bounces off. Or maybe he's, you know, and there's the infinite amount of variables where, oh, instead of going to the ropes, he reverses and throws you into the ropes. Or he goes to the ropes and then holds himself, or a million other things. And that is, it's absurd. An Irish whip is absurd.
Yeah.
But because you're used to it, because you're used to the form, you just buy it. You're just like, oh, yeah, Irish whip, sure. But when you watch one of the more extraordinary, insane death matches with insane exploding barbed wire, with piranhas, with scissor boards,
mm-hmm.
which
light tubes,
with weed whackers, with
oh my god,
with whatever, all these ridiculous, the cleaver board. Which...
Oh my god, my favorite is when they take like shish kebab skewers and like hold them in a bundle on your forehead or something and then like tap them in and you let go.
God.
Yeah, it's kind of beautiful.
It's so awful.
It's so fucked up.
But I mean,
I think the thing is, I wouldn't be able to watch this if it wasn't consensual. If this were like presented like UFC, like I would not be into it.
No, I mean, it is inherently, you know, that is, I think, one thing that a lot of wrestling fans who aren't necessarily sports fans, that's why they like wrestling, is because they at a base level, they understand these people are working together. They mm-hmm. are trying to tell a story together, no matter how grotesque the action might get. They are, at the end of the day, cool with getting skewers stabbed into their head, or with, you know, their back opened up by thumbtacks or whatever. But
thank you for everything you do to your body.
Yes, exactly. I mean, it's not necessarily like, I don't know, my hesitation with certain, I can deal with certain kinds of levels of deathmatch, but when you get to skewers, and when you get to cheese graters, when you get to the scissor boards or the cleaver boards, I start going, I can't do this. I can't. This just, it's too gory. It's too grotesque. I think it's because it breaks that illusion of safety of like, oh no, they're actually going to be okay. And I'm like, no, that guy's not okay. He's that scissor just got jammed into his like his throat. Like, that's not all right. That's bad. Even if it's blunted and it actually didn't do any damage, it's still like I think my internal caution of like, oh no, this is totally not okay for these guys. They're gonna definitely get hurt. I can't do this anymore. Even though bleeding a little bit is probably less damaging than taking a Phoenix splash onto bare wood like Kenny did in the, like Kenny Omega versus Moxley in their quote unquote death match, their lights out match mm-hmm. with the barbed wire and all that stuff. The most actual damaging thing that happened in that match was Kenny taking a Phoenix splash onto exposed wood, like missing it on Moxley and just hitting the wood. That's the thing that probably did the most damage to him. It wasn't him like falling onto some barbed wire. He bled a little bit, but he's fine. It's just, they'll heal.
Yeah.
What was I saying? I was saying that those death matches are like the furthest extension of, what are we doing? What is this is so absurd. Why? Exploding ring? What, like, piranha? Like, really?
Yeah.
That absurd, like, how is this a real fight? There is nothing in this that resembles MMA or a boxing match. It is... Mm-hmm. It is absurd, and like it gets to like it's closer to Dragon Ball Z. It is closer to anime or manga, you know, or superhero combat, where it's just absurd.
Yeah, I agree with you. It actually makes me think of like porn. well, I mean, like if you're comparing like a death match to a real fight, sometimes porn is so like out of control that it's like this couldn't possibly ever be real. But it's like satisfying some weird voyeuristic fantasy that somebody has.
I mean, that's true. There is like
There's a level of kayfabe that's present in porn that is.
I was not expecting that sentence to be said today, but I agree with you.
I think a lot about the ways that pro wrestling is similar to other things, and I think porn and sex work in general, and also like reality TV.
I mean, it's you're not wrong. I think there is a level of they don't like porn does not resemble in most ways real sex, and wrestling in most ways does not resemble a real fight.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Glad we could agree on that.
I mean, it's 100% true. Now that is, if anyone listening wants to go do a dissertation on wrestling versus porn.
I think you don't have to dive that deep into Joshi to find some of the content like that.
Oh, no.
You know, the best shirt one time, it said, like, 90s Japanese women's pro wrestling. It's not just for pervs anymore.
I mean, that was pretty funny. It is, I think that is I don't know, there is a shady side to Joshi in particular that is just accepted, I think, at a certain level, but I think it's kind of ingrained in Japanese culture in a certain way. I don't know if I have the depth in the subject to speak about it necessarily, but you know, that the fact that all Joshi are mostly expected, you're going to at least take pictures in bikinis. And your pictures are going to be sold to men, most definitely.
Yeah, I would be really interested to talk to like a Japanese like anthropologist or like sports ethnographer or something that could talk about the relationship between like cultural, like Japanese cultural attitudes towards like sexuality and how that plays into Joshi.
And like the connection to like idol culture. I think it's also that as well.
It's fascinating. I felt like when we went to Japan this year, I left with more questions about Japanese culture than I had going into it. Where I just wanted to know constantly more and more about, like, I don't know. It's very obviously a rich culture that has built on itself over time. And I felt like I did not understand as much of it as I wanted to. Oh man, I hope I get to go back at some point.
Yeah, I was talking with a friend about going to the G1 this year, but that's not going to happen.
Have you been to Japan before?
I have never been to Japan. That is my sole like dream trip. I want to go to Japan for 2 weeks and spend a week in Tokyo and a week elsewhere throughout the country. See as many wrestling matches as I can. And just I like a lot of Japanese stuff, culture, art in general, and then but also go to Karyuken Hall and go to wherever, go to as many places as I possibly can, but again, off laid plans of mice and men.
I believe it will happen for you.
I'll make it happen. I will find a way. How was attending Wrestle Kingdom in person?
Oh my God. It was incredible. It was like a dream come true. Like a year and a half ago, I started saying to my husband, like, oh, we're going to go to Wrestle Kingdom in 2020. And it was like a joke, but I said it enough times that it became real. it felt like, okay, so I often feel like I'm constantly explaining to my friends what Japanese pro wrestling is because there's so few people I know who actually like it. And so going to a place where everyone is like, oh, hell yeah, Jushin Thunder Liger, was just so exciting. And the way that, like, I love any live sporting event, really. I just, like, love that atmosphere. And I think it's one of the oldest things we've been doing as, like, a people is getting together and enjoying like sports as a group. But the Tokyo Dome, I mean, first of all, it's huge. There's like 40,000 people there. And the crowds in Japan are no joke. I fully had like a panic attack the first time I was in a huge crowd because I was like, but they serve like edamame there and they have girls with like beer kegs on their back going around and like filling people up. it was really fun. And we got tickets, you know, the way that they sell tickets is they had like a gaijin section. So we were sitting with other people from other countries and a lot of them had English. So could kind of just chat with like, oh yeah, you know, I'm coming from New Zealand and all that stuff. And gave me an opportunity too, to meet some other, you know, like Instagram followers who, that makes me sound, well, Instagram followers now, like people I know through Instagram who were there, that I got to like be real friends with. But I don't know, I was just hyped the whole time. Every single match was like incredible. I'm really, really happy we were there for Liger's retirement. I mean, he's incredible. And people were so, I mean, it was crazy to be in a group of like 40,000 people and then have them go completely silent for like, you know, for one reason or another, and then like burst into this like mass expression of emotion together. I don't know. Japan was so regulated in public spaces that being at the Tokyo Dome for Wrestle Kingdom felt like everyone was just kind of like letting loose finally. But I have so much to say about it. There was like a ton of cosplay, which was really delightful. I spent like all of my money at the New Japan store, merch store, which was incredible.
I mean, I would do the same thing. I would buy everything.
Yeah. Next time we go back, I might see if I can set up a little situation where I could buy some stuff for people and bring it back. Because, yeah, I don't know how else you get it.
I mean, you can go through like into your intermediary and buy it through a Japanese website and then have it shipped to a different, another, to one of these services, and then have the service ship it to you. And mm-hmm. it takes like 2 months to get to you, and you pay twice as much as the original cost was. But wow. You could technically do it if you really, really want that jacket, which the Young Lion jacket or whatever, which I really do want that Young Lion jacket every year. They change it. I want it every single year. I don't care what it looks like.
Oh, man. So I just pulled up when I was at Wrestle Kingdom, I made a note. Like I wrote down the card and I'm just like pulling it back up right now and looking at some of the matches. Like the Moxley Lance Archer Texas Death Match was really fun. Hiromu versus Will Ospreay. Oh, holy shit. That was great.
I think
that was my favorite of both nights.
Yeah, it was probably my favorite match, but it's hard for me to like separate the fact that, yes, it's probably the best match. Like, those dudes are, both of them are impossible. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know how they exist. And
I thought they were going to kill each other.
I mean, that's how both of them wrestle, is constantly like you're on a razor's edge waiting for one of the other to do something insane and maybe kill themselves. Mm-hmm. Either one. It's hard for me to separate. Oh, well, yeah, I thought that match was the best, but it's also like I get to, you know, watching Naito finally win, you know, in the Tokyo Dome. That is something. You know, I've been waiting years for that to happen. And it's like just the motion of it. It's like it wasn't the best match. It was a good match, maybe even a great match. I need to rewatch it again. But just the emotion carrying with it, like I have been like watching. Gato and his booking and Naito constantly, like in 2018 Wrestle Kingdom, I was like, oh, Naito's gonna win, obviously, right? He's gonna be Okada mm-hmm. and he's gonna be champion. Yeah. And then he didn't. And I'm like, oh, bummer. Waited 2 more years, and that was already building for years waiting for Naito to win. And now 2 more years, and like just having that happen was very powerful, even if it's not the best quote-unquote match.
Yeah, and the emotional response, like it was so loud when he won. I mean, everyone was on their feet screaming. And you know, I was just talking to my husband last night about how important crowds are in pro wrestling, because they just like throw this curveball in. And I think Naito's a really great example of that, where it I think he did the what his finishing move was when he was the face initially.
The Stardust Press.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Mini Tanahashi, basically, is what Stardust Genius. He was just like a mini Tanahashi.
Yeah. But it's just really interesting that, you know, I appreciate it when characters don't play out the way that they're kind of intended to.
Mm-hmm.
I think my other favorite match from Wrestle Kingdom was maybe Zack Sabre Jr. versus Sonata.
I love those two.
That was really good. Yeah. Ugh. And how could I forget Tana Fozzy? Oh my god.
Tana Fozzy.
Dude, okay, so I found that like the wrestlers I end up loving the most are the ones that I didn't like at first. Pretty consistently. And like I didn't come into New Japan when Tana was like the ace. So he kind of got presented to me as like this aging star. And I don't know. I didn't have like the nostalgia of like, oh my God, he's so incredible. And now I know better. But Jericho in particular, I was like, oh fuck this guy. He's so lame. His whole character in both New Japan and AEW is so beautifully dialed in. And oh my God. Oh, sorry. I'm like rubbing my face. I love Chris Jericho so much.
Chris Jericho, he's great. He's probably one of the best ever.
He's just doing a really good job of descending into his like later years as a wrestler and like using that reality to form the character that he's playing. It's just very good. And to see him next to like Tanahashi doing that too, who's kind of dealing with the same situation, was really interesting. But man, making fun of Chris Jericho's band, I will never get tired of that.
Do you hear this is a serious question? Do you know any unironic Fozzy fans?
No.
I do know an unironic Fozzy fan.
Oh boy. Now, did they get into does anyone get into Fozzy before they get into Chris Jericho?
I don't know.
I like need answers.
he absolutely is a Chris Jericho fan first. But okay. I'm assuming he just doesn't listen to Fozzy for fun. Like, I mean, ironically I'm enjoying this, and he will routinely listen to that music and or any other wrestling theme music. I assume he is listening to Fozzy because he genuinely enjoys it.
Okay. Well, I mean, you can't help what you like. I am here talking about pro wrestling with you.
That's true. I mean, I think there is also there is certainly, I have to assume that there is at least a single person on Earth from the nearly 8 billion people that have discovered Fozzy first and liked Fozzy before they knew that the lead singer is Chris Jericho. There has to be a person. All right. One.
God bless. Jeez.
They really like rock music. They love, like, that's like when I think of Fozzy, I just think of like, that is rock. It's just like, if I just say, hey, it's rock music with no extra adjectives, like, I wouldn't even put like an extra adjective because I don't think it signifies it. Like, there's not enough out other than what it is. Like, there's nothing, like, calling it awful is not good enough because it's not awful. It's not, it's just nothing. It's just like, it is just the most, like, calling it generic is even too much, I think. Like,
yeah,
it's more generic than generic.
I've never actually listened to Fozzy.
You've listened to Judas.
That's fair. Yeah. And Judas is my hand washing song, but mostly because I pretty much have it in my head constantly.
That's the best Fozzy song. So you've heard the best of it.
All right. Fair enough. I won't dive any deeper.
Have you ever listened to Motley Crue?
Reluctantly. Is it in that vein?
It's better. Motley Crue is better than all of Fozzy. So,
oh, jeez. It's, oh, not, boy.
I love Chris Jericho. I think he's a great professional. He's one of the best professional wrestlers of all time. And I'm glad that he finds joy in cosplaying as a rock and roll star.
You know, my fantasy right now, my professional goal, I would love to paint like an over the top oil portrait of Chris Jericho that can hang behind him in a promo.
That is not outside of the range of possibilities. I would say, right?
Can you imagine him on like a throne with like that pouty face that he makes and like some bubbly? It would be so good.
I mean, I have a feeling that that could happen. Like, that's not impossible.
Okay, so I'm working on a commission right now for the owner of GCW, okay. Game Changing Wrestling.
Yeah.
And there's part of me that's like, oh shit, maybe this is like, I don't know, maybe he'll show like Joey Janela this painting I'm making of him, and then Joey Janela will be like, make a painting for me, and then I can be a wrestler or like painter to the wrestlers. Which is, when I say this out loud, I'm like, oh boy, this is my life, huh? But
Go ahead, finish your thought. I'm sorry.
Oh, I was just saying, like, nothing has made me feel kind of more authentic in my identity than like getting really into pro wrestling, which again, I kind of can't believe that's what it is, but I love it.
When I said earlier that I envy you not having a lot of knowledge about the Attitude Era and prior, I envy you because it's never been better to be a professional wrestling fan. It's never been better than right now. Like, the Attitude Era, everyone loves it, and then all this nostalgia for it. It's mostly terrible. Like, I loved it back then. I was a teenage boy. Of course I loved it. It was, but you watch it now and it's full of just terrible, awful things. It was exciting because it was car crash television, as they said. But no, I'd rather 100% watch wrestling now when it's not the most popular thing in the world. When it's when there's not Stone Cold t-shirts everywhere.
Yeah. I'm actually working on a Stone Cold Beer Smash commission right now, which led me to go back and do research. Heavy quotes research and watch a bunch of like Stone Cold promos and stuff like that. He's fun.
No, I mean, Stone Cold was great. I'm not, no argument there. And like his feud with Vince is like transformative. It changed wrestling. But also, like, have you watched his ECW Superstar promo?
No.
I'll send you a link after we're done. It is my favorite. It's probably my second favorite wrestling promo of all time.
Okay. What's your first?
Dusty Rhodes. The View Never Changes, which is one that is not as, I think, as well known as, like, obviously, like, you know, Hard Times and a lot of his other earlier stuff. This was when it was in the mid-90s and when WCW was not popular and Dustin was still young. But it's like an ethos for me, like The View Never Changes. It's so beautiful.
Okay, send it to me. You know, a couple years ago when I did get into wrestling and was trying to figure out what the hell it was, I watched, like, you know, I went on a listicle of like the best promos. So I may have seen stuff and just like don't remember it, but I'm always down to watch more wrestling content.
I mean, those are ones when I'm feeling bummed. I will watch to cheer myself up or to get myself motivated, to get myself, you know, feeling better. I mean, that's some of my favorite promos. That's like all they are like actually very positive and very motivational and very like affirmative. They're very much like, no, you can do this. You are great. I'm great. And therefore you are great. You know, and they're speaking like wrestlers are so confident about themselves and what they can and will do.
Yeah. Yeah. Who's your favorite in New Japan right now?
Oh God. You gotta ask me, like picking my favorite kid. my favorite in New Japan. It was Kenny. And then Kenny left.
Mm-hmm. I'm a big girl too.
But I have to pick one. I mean, I love Naito. I think Naito. But if you ask me tomorrow, it might be Ibushi or it might be Tanahashi or it might be Okada. It might be Sonata. I love Sonata. Mm-hmm. I love Suzuki. I love Zack Sabre Jr. I love.
Okay, you can't name everybody.
That's what I'm saying. Naito. My answer is Naito, but I love everyone. They're all the best. Ishii. Okay.
Yeah, Ishii was going to be my answer right now. I mean, I'm always going to say, well, not always, but like for the last year or so, if you ask me who is the best pro wrestler, I would say Okada.
Yes, like, I agree with you.
Hands down, he's been the best for a while. He'll continue to be the best from what I can tell. Although I am all in on Shota Umino. I'm calling this right now. Shooter. I think give it like 5 years and he's going to be just like killing it in New Japan.
Shooter is the best. Shooter's great.
Shooter. Oh my God. So good. I want him to come back and like join Suzuki-gun. But I want Suzuki-gun to be like, this is how I imagine 5 years from now.
Okay.
I think Minoru is going to retire at some point. I don't think it's going to happen in the next year, but it's going to be soon. I think Shingo Takagi is going to leave LIJ.
Ooh.
And then start Takage-gun.
Wow.
And then get fucking Shota in there as, I don't know, just like a big submission guy.
Okay. No Saber-gun? We're not getting Saber-gun?
Maybe there will be a power struggle.
Because that's what that's what I always figured what would happen is, you know, eventually Suzuki, whenever he wants to retire, when he's tired mm-hmm. of taking side bumps because his back can't take it anymore because he's 50 goddamn years old. I would figure Saber would take over if Saber doesn't get tired of traveling to Japan all the time.
Man, when I first started watching New Japan, I remember coming off of WWE where they're constantly showing you names and Twitter handles and you don't have to work too hard to remember who people are. Well, watching New Japan, I remember being like, fuck, all of these guys, like, kind of are the same to me, except for the like old scary dad that comes out. But yeah, Minoru was my favorite at first for sure. Murder. And he's still like, I was so happy that we got to Kaze Ninare at Wrestle Kingdom because the first night he came out, but it wasn't like to his music.
It feels wrong not to have not have that music whenever he's present. He should have it whenever, even if it's just a small appearance, he should still get the music.
Yeah. Everyone should have the chance. I'm also a really big fan of Dragon Lee, or Ryu Lee.
It's the same. I don't know why it's so weird that they can't use the same, like, because of their weird relationship with CMLL and AAA and all the weird rivalry that mm-hmm. can't let him just be Dragon Lee. Who cares? Whatever. Okay.
I'm starting to realize right now maybe I should get into like New Japan fan fiction because I'm thinking like Hiromu and Dragon Lee in my mind. I like totally ship them.
Oh man, yeah, obviously. Yeah. Come on.
Yeah. Yeah.
They hate each other, but of course they actually love each other.
Yeah, it's great.
I mean like it writes itself. Like you just have Dragon Lee breaks his neck, and then obviously he's like the nurse to mm-hmm. nursing Hiromu back to health because he was responsible.
Yeah, it's beautiful. He's beautiful.
I mean, that probably already exists. Because I could think of it, that means someone's already done it. Like that probably
100%.
Yeah, I've never really looked into New Japan fan fiction, but I guarantee you that exists mm-hmm. somewhere in some language, maybe in Japanese, but
100%.
I mean, that's part of the charm of New Japan is that the, you know, in wrestling in general is like this unbridled, I don't know, there's less, it feels very much like there's less shame in New Japan about men being pretty.
Mm.
Or, like, it was the thing I thought of first in when the Golden Lovers reunited, when mm-hmm. The moment where Kenny and Ibushi are backstage, and there's a very short moment of like I think it's Ibushi putting a hand on Kenny's chest,
mm-hmm.
and it's just like it's short, like less than 10 seconds or whatever, but it's tender.
I know.
I think it's like there is a air of that in New Japan that is not present in Western wrestling, really. Not even in AEW, which I think is less tentative about that stuff than WWE is. New Japan mm-hmm. has it way more, and they're less afraid of like, no, we have female fans, we have gay fans too, but of course, I mean, I think there's still stigma about that, but they they're still like, no, we have female fans and we know these dudes are absurdly handsome. We're just gonna like, yeah, obviously. Yes. This is one of the reasons you're watching this. Look at these guys. They're impossible.
Mm-hmm.
There's a picture.
Ibushi too is insane.
There's literally, I said my friend Eric, who's on many other episodes of this podcast, also discussing New Japan Pro Wrestling, and I just sent him a picture of, there's like some picture floating around on the Squared Circle of Ibushi, of like some, and he looks like an impossible man. Like, how does he look like that?
Yeah. How do you look like that, A? How do you look like that pushing 40?
I refuse, okay? Ibushi is an immortal. He doesn't age. Like, he looks like he's 25. He can't be 39. Mm-hmm. That's impossible. I refuse. Yeah,
he's a Ken doll.
And did you see that video of him that he posted of him doing a moonsault to his cell phone?
Yeah. Yeah.
And he just walks right over it, and you're just, like, staring straight up at his junk, and you're like, Ibushi, I know what you're doing.
Yeah, we all know what you're doing.
We see you, Kota. We know. Like, come on.
Yeah, they're very good with the fan service for women over there, and I really appreciate that, because it's not like we're not watching. It's not like we're not watching. Like, that, I don't know. I've been to a number of different live shows, and my favorite is Portland, one of Portland's local promotions, DOA. And they have shows like once a month at a local comedy club, which is kind of a hilarious venue for it because it doesn't really fit, but it works. And the crowd there is like 50-50 men, women. There's a lot of younger folks. There's actually a crew of like teenage girls that show up, which I love. But I had the good fortune to go to All In back in 2018. And I remember being like maybe 10% of the people there were female, and it was a very weird feeling. But at Wrestle Kingdom in Japan, it was like, again, like 50-50 maybe. I mean, there were a lot of women there, and it's just dumb not to acknowledge that. So I appreciate that, that New Japan is catering to our male gaze, if you will.
I mean, I don't know, to deny that, I think it's a weird thing that is never confronted in WWE. And I think because WWE dominates the pro wrestling discussion in a lot of ways, for at least it has throughout most of my life. And I think we're just finally getting to the point where it's not, because of AEW, because of the numerous indie promotions, because of New Japan. It's a weird thing for them to, like, the way that the WWE has historically treated gay characters or just not even gay characters like that. Yes, there is like the level obvious offensive stereotype that has been any kind of male character that has also presented any kind of feminine characteristics at all, or historically stereotypically feminine characteristics. They're usually a joke.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's obvious. That stuff's obvious. It's even the more subtle stuff that is like the case of the not gays. Like, there's just, it's exhausting sometimes watching it, and WWE has to be like, no, these guys are definitely not gay. This is masculine, and we're manly men. And
yeah, it is exhausting is the right word for it.
And you watch pro wrestling, and you watch male, like New Japan in particular, like, It to deny the homoerotism is ridiculous. It is absurd in and of itself to try to deny the very fact that, yeah, some of the reason you're watching is to see the, like I mentioned earlier, everyone's a model. Even people who aren't stereotypically models, you still, like, Suzuki himself, he is 50 years old, and he's not in the best shape because he is 50 years old. Or Chris Jericho, even. And Tanahashi, the aging stars, who their bodies are like breaking down, or they don't look like Kota Ibushi.
Yeah,
but you're still like, well, the presentation of their body is important. It's part of wrestling. Even like, I don't want to necessarily, people don't all have to look like Kota Ibushi. That's kind of the beauty of pro wrestling, is that you can have this incredible variety of body types. And they all can be presented as fighters and serious competitors.
Yeah. I mean, that's something that I don't think WWE is going to embrace more until Vince dies. No, honestly, I mean, you start to invite a much wider range of like narrative possibilities when you increase the, you know, variety of people that you're portraying. And that's something, that's why I like have been super hyped about AEW for having people like Nyla Rose and Sunny Kiss, and then not making their whole story about those people being queer. It's like, oh my God, they can be more than just that. And I just can't see that happening in WWE like anytime soon. I mean, they're only just like letting people wear, who is it? Sonya Deville wore like a rainbow thing last June during Pride. And it's like, that's the most you're going to let somebody be gay. Like, that sucks. I don't know.
I mean, it is one of the many things that I dislike about the WWE. It's, you know, there's a lot of other, I could talk for like 3 hours about it, but it is just about those, like, oh, all the things the WWE does that I don't agree with. But
yeah, I want to acknowledge too that we've been talking about New Japan, and it's not like they have any kind of explicit like queerness involved in their stories. I mean, you do, like, we talked about the Golden Lovers, and again, we could do a whole podcast talking about the Golden Lovers. And that's just about as close as they get to having any queerness in the storytelling.
Yeah. I think there is
better.
Yeah. I hesitate to criticize New Japan as much because it is so ingrained in like the Japanese wrestling traditions that I'm in the very fact that like DDT exists, and DDT and is so aggressively like, I think, open to anything and to any kind of character, any kind of, yes, there's queer characters in DDT, and sometimes they're jokes, but sometimes they're not, you know, like sometimes they themselves are totally fine with switching back and forth. And I feel like New Japan realizes that DDT is doing all of that and doesn't want to try and because they understand that they can't compete in the same way that DDT is and doing like in that kind of genre, even. In the US, the only companies that are doing anything in that same vein, like AW does it some. And I think it's, I was like, Nyla's great. And the fact that they don't even bring up that she's trans at all. Like, she is just another woman.
Yeah. It's amazing.
That's like, and I don't like, for everything that AW gets criticism about, which I think some of it's fair, that is something that I think that they have stuck to, and she's just a fucking badass. That's all she is. She like fucking puts people through tables and hits people in the head with kendo sticks. It's great. Mm-hmm. It's fantastic. There's not the only people doing, there's not like, DDT is like the second or third largest company in Japan. Mm-hmm. In America, there's AEW, Ring of Honor isn't doing that. Impact is not doing that, really. It's better than it was. It's better than TNA. You also don't have any memory or knowledge of TNA and what they were.
No.
You're very lucky. But it's all indies. Like you mentioned what, DOA, you said? I'm not familiar with it, but there's a lot of I'm trying to think of, there's an Austin promotion that also is aggressively queer. I just can't remember the name of it. I went to a show.
There's a number of promotions that kind of tour between Portland, Seattle, and Vancouver. And DOA is kind of like based in Salem, I think, but they come up here. They did come up here pretty frequently. But one of the big baby faces in the Pacific Northwest is a fella named Randy Myers. Have you heard about him?
I have not.
Oh, he's great. So he's kind of like a grungy punk boy. And he comes out to, he's like coded queer, and he comes out to Etta James At Last. And I know it's so great because you know how that song starts with those beautiful strings. And then he comes out and his whole thing is he'll like lock eyes with a dude in the audience and just like, as if he were Pepe Le Pew, just kind of like being carried by his heart, like floating across the room. He goes up to that guy and he'll say, like, do you consent? Can I kiss you? And the person will be like, yes. And then they'll kiss. And his whole thing is that he's queer and that he reps consent, and people will chant like, consent is sexy. And it's like, it's incredible. Like, I love living in this part of the country in a place where they know, like, promoters know that it's reliable, that they're going to be able to get a crowd to cheer for this like queer guy. It's just my fucking favorite. Like, I think maybe my favorite match I've seen with him was, oh God, what's his name? Who's like the real, not Darby Allin, but the other like goth guy that's on AEW.
Jimmy Havoc.
He's British. Jimmy Havoc. Yeah. So Jimmy Havoc came with Defy, who's out of Seattle. And they were down in Portland, and they did a whole spot with the staple gun, which is just like the perfect prop for Jimmy Havoc. And he like stapled the poster to Randy Meyer's tongue. And then they made out.
Oh, God.
I know. And I was in the, like, that did something for me. And I was in the audience like, what the fuck is wrong with me right now? Like, I didn't know I was into this.
I hope this hasn't awakened something in me.
I know, right? Oh, man. My husband's going to listen to this and he's going to be like, what the fuck?
The Austin promotion I was thinking of is called Party World Wrestling.
Which, wow.
They are also aggressively queer. And the show I went to, they do it at their quarterly shows. They crowdfund other shows. They do it. Unfortunately, it was in the middle of last summer, and it was 1,000 degrees inside the brewery that the show was in, and I could not stand it anymore. I had to leave because I was dying. And I didn't want to drink more beer. That would not solve my problem of dehydration. Yeah. But the show was... like it's like watching John Waters meets Cronenberg. That's like it, like the show in the fiction of Party World Wrestling. We were all watching a wrestling show inside of a giant worm that had devoured us.
Oh my God. What is this? I'm on their Facebook right now and I'm seeing the Feral Fairies. A country western tag team. This looks great. One of my best friends just moved to Austin and I owe her a visit, so maybe I should time that up with when there's going to be a Party World Wrestling show.
It's very, very, yeah. I would say don't do the one. Well, you won't have to worry about it now because we won't be traveling to Austin probably this summer, but I would say opt to try for a spring, fall, or winter show, not June when it is 5 million degrees in Austin.
Keep that in mind.
But that's another that I think in America, in the West, even that is where, you know, that presentation is that's where it's acceptable. You know, mm-hmm. It's acceptable in smaller places like Portland or Austin, where there's a sizable community that wants. Who likes wrestling, but also wants progressive characters and weird and weirdness and queerness and all those things.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to get that in the WWE. Probably I would not even after Vince is dead. I don't think that's going to necessarily. Don't think they're just going to. I don't think whoever's Triple H or Stephanie, they might like start having somewhat more gay characters, but like Sonya Deville's.
I hope so. I think what's more likely to happen after Vince dies is I think they might make the main roster a little bit more like NXT, just in terms of the ratio of like fighting to, you know, mic work.
Promos, yeah.
I don't know. Man, I don't know if like what WWE would have to do to get me back on board as a fan. To be honest, one of my biggest qualms with them is just the way they shoot things.
Yeah.
Like there's so many cuts that I get like seasick.
I mean, that's what honestly that is what it would take for me is not even Vince. Like, I can most of the time deal with Vince's terrible storytelling and his love of, you know, people that look like Roman Reigns. Like, I'm fine with Roman Reigns. He's fine. It's done. Ryan, whatever the dude handles their television production. Who has more like 55 cuts in the span of 18 seconds. And I can't. New Japan is like, and even AEW is better. I still think AW cuts more than they should, but I think that they are a middle ground between New Japan, who is just like, no, this is like you're watching a boxing match. We're not gonna like zoom in and shake the effing camera around like I'm trying to like watch like a Bourne Identity movie. I want to see what's happening. I want to watch the wrestling. Please let me watch the wrestling.
I honestly think that the like cameramen in New Japan are like the unsung heroes of that promotion. They like, you know, I said wrestling, I think primarily is a live art form, but, you know.
Well, I mean, I can't think always. Their camera work makes you feel like you're at the show. I think that's why New Japan works so well when I've never been to Japan. I've been to a New Japan show, the one that was in Dallas. I went to that one. It was great. Got to see Okada wrestle Tanahashi.
Oh, man.
And I got to see Sonata wrestle Zack Sabre Jr.
Nice.
Where everyone, it was a Sonata one with a snap pin, and literally it was like very sudden, and every single person in the arena stood up at the exact, it was like, at all the same time. It was fantastic.
Was that the like G1, the beginning of the G1 last summer?
Yeah, it was the G1 special. Yeah. It was a great time, but I've never been to Japan. I'm not going to be regularly seeing New Japan shows, but watching them on video or on streaming on their New Japan World, it's not as different than watching, I've been to AEW shows. I was also at All In. I was at Double or Nothing. I went to one of the last shows they did before they shut down in here in Austin. And it's way better, obviously, live. Like, it's not even close. Like, it's such a difference. But when you're watching New Japan on video, the cameramen, they shoot it so dramatically and focus on the action. And it helps communicate that the feeling of being there way more than WWE does, even though WWE is like zooming in on you and shaking and like, look at this. Because it just all it does is feels like I'm watching a bad movie.
Yeah.
When I'm watching
movie in a bad way. Some bad movies are great, but.
Well, no, but yeah, I mean, like, I agree with what you're bad, saying. Bad movie, not a good, bad movie.
Yes. No, I get you.
I would like to see the thing I'm looking at. That is one of my basic requirements for watching anything.
I would like to see it. Thank you.
Please let me see it. Like, when movies are color graded or Game of Thrones, I think one of the Game of Thrones, less Game of Thrones episodes was color graded so dark. You couldn't see it. And it's just like, or when shows don't put the camera on the thing that's happening, I'm like, well, who's this for? what are we doing? Why are we doing this?
Do the work for me. Yeah.
New Japan, like the way there's, I think, another show buckle video or someone, the other creator, they made a video about their camera work and how when like the easiest demonstration is like when Kenny Omega was doing a V trigger into the corner. Like, someone's draped in the corner, Kenny's coming in from behind doing a V-trigger. The camera always shoots it from the from that corner. So Kenny's coming at us.
Mm-hmm.
And when he hits, it's like he's hitting us. Like, you feel the impact of that. And they don't cut away. They don't do quick cut to three other cameras while he's doing that. It's just Kenny's coming right at us. When Tanahashi goes up to the top rope to do a high fly flow, the camera is always on the floor looking up at him. Mm-hmm. It's accentuating how high he is. Like, he's only, you know, in the real life, he's what, 10 and 12 feet up in the air, but to us, he can be on top of a 5-story building and he's impossibly high.
Yeah, that's a good observation. That's something that when I'm looking for like reference material for painting, I spend a lot of time thinking about where the camera is and how that makes you feel as somebody like looking at that image. That's part of why I like initially when I first started painting wrestling, I didn't really go to WWE for, you know, what I do is I like watch matches and take screen caps and then like go from there.
Yeah. Do find out which angle is the one you want.
Mm-hmm. I've been relying on it less and less though, because like at first I was just bending over backwards to find like, oh, I need a picture of Bull Nakano, but I need it from like the bottom left. And you're just not going to find exactly the pose and angle that you need all the time. But luckily, I've gotten better as an artist, so I don't need the reference material quite as much.
I mean, it's the nature of work, nature of creative work. You're like, oh, yeah. I'm better. Isn't that nice?
Totally.
I've practiced. I've done this for 10,000 hours, and so I'm incrementally better.
Oh, man. I got to say, the quarantine has been, like, I feel like I've improved quite a bit in the last, like, 10 weeks with painting, just because I've had the luxury to do it every day. Yeah, it makes me want to find, like, my own Medici that can just, like, pay for me to make art so I don't have to go back to work when this opens back up again.
I mean, there is Patreon.com. They have, that is Medici, basically, right now.
Yeah. I haven't looked into Patreon, to be honest.
I mean, I run one for one of my other podcasts, and... Mm-hmm.
No, I definitely give to Patreons. Like, I'm familiar with the platform.
Yeah, but you can. You can bank on roughly 10% of your audience to actually contribute. That's my experience. But
well, I can tell you. Maybe I'll leave you with this. This little anecdote. So I finished my BFA in December. Thank God before this happened. And so my husband and I decided, okay, we're going to start like trying to have a kid. And I much like I had breathed into fruition the going to Wrestle Kingdom by just saying that we were going to go, I started saying like, oh, well, you know, if I get pregnant in Japan or something, we should totally name the kid like middle name Thunder, right? Because of like, you know, Jushin retiring. That didn't happen, but now I kind of am really endeared to that idea and keep coming up with like, maybe we should name our child like such and such Thunder Hunter or whatever. But we ended up we have a kitten that we named Switchblade. That might be the most I can get away with, but
that fucker, Jay White.
And you know what? This cat's kind of a fucker too. And we brought this on ourselves.
That fucker. I love Jay White. He's great.
No, I do too.
But he is a fucker. Him and Kenta. Yeah. They're so good. They're fucking
so good. Oh, assholes. I forgot about Kenta. I love Kenta.
Kenta's great. Kenta's also great. Before we go, Helen, what would you like to plug? Where can people find your art? Where can they buy it? Etc.
So you can go to my website. It's HelenHunterArt.com. I'm also Helen Hunter Art on Instagram. You can buy my art on my website or send me a message and we can talk about it. I do commissions, and that's a big part of that's like most of the money I'm making right now, is doing like little wrestling paintings for people. I'll paint whatever match you want or whatever wrestler you want or whatever really you want. So if you're in the market for an oil painting, I'm your girl.
They're really great. I really do like them. I love my bull is right in front of my desk, so I see her every day.
Well, that makes me happy. I'm glad it went to somebody that appreciates it.
It's just so she's so powerful. She's amazing. She's like,
it's good energy.
It is. It's again affirmative. It's like affirming. It makes me want to live life when it makes me want to do leg drops off the top of a cage.
Aw, oh, that makes me happy. I'm glad I can put that out in the world.
Absolutely. So everyone out there, you should go check out Helen's art. We'll give her a follow on Instagram at the very least. Helen, thank you for joining me.
Well, thank you for having me.
Thanks again to Helen for joining me. You can find me on Twitter at Robbie Dorman, and my website is robbiedorman.com. You'll find links there for my other podcasts and a link to purchase my horror novels, including my newest novel, The Split Circle. Split Circle is about an exiled American trapped in the Eastern European city of Krav, who must investigate a soccer death cult. You can find it on Amazon.com and read it for free with Kindle Unlimited. The show's website is serialfanasis.com, and if you like the show, please give a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Subscribe, tell your friends. All those things help out the show, help me out. I really appreciate it. Until next time, thanks for being a fan.